Ahoy there, Kevin.
Took my opening line. I was going to say, ahoy, Carrington. Ahoy.
You are likely to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
So how you been?
I've been good, Tom.
You've been away.
You've
been Instagramming from like other parts of the world.
Yes, I went to Poland and had a good time. And you know, we did churches and castles and all the old things you're supposed to do.
Visited them, not built them. Apparently, I would assume.
Right, we visited them, but
claimed them in the name of Savitz.
Would that it were so. But the nerdy things I did is I went to a pinball museum in Krakow.
Cool.
And that was cool. And I went to a museum called I have to get the name of it. It was really good. The Museum of Computers and Games of the Past Era.
That doesn't narrow it down. It is all time except now.
Exactly. Yes. And that was pretty cool. And they were
in fact, aren't all museums computers. About past things?
I think
just
so,
the
yeah.
museum
this
kind
was
of implies that.
And games of the past era. Yes. And so there was a lot of 8-bit computers there, and some of them behind glass and some of them that you could play with. And I played River Raid on a Atari, just like I would have done at home. So. But they also had a lot of weird Polish machines that I'd never heard of. And that was kind of fun.
Nice. So. Very cool.
And there was no Infocom games there.
Boo. Well, you could have brought one with you.
I could have. Left it there. Snuck it in there like you sneak things into the garage. Give away.
Exactly.
This wasn't here before.
Nope.
I did bring in, I didn't bring any of the Eaten by a Gru cards, but I brought a handful of the Antic podcast business cards and sort of left them around. And first I was like sneakily leaving them around in places and by the Atari 400 they had set out to play. And then at the front of the place, where you buy your tickets and t-shirts and all that stuff, there was one of those little plastic business card holders, which happened to be empty, so I just put
so
my
you just
Antic,
filled it up.
I just put like 20 Antic podcast business cards in there, and
excellent.
By the time I got home from the museum, there had been 2 signups to the Antic Facebook group from Poland.
There you go. And so basically, now Antic is just going to send you around the world on a marketing tour.
Yes, I think so. The junket of nerdy museums. I'd be willing to do that.
Nice.
Yeah. This week we played Cutthroats.
Cutthroats, which is far less piratey than the name would imply, I thought.
Yeah, it really wasn't very piratey.
Nope.
It was boaty, for sure.
It was definitely boaty.
It was boaty.
There was diving, there was wetness, but there was very little piracy.
A lot of sailing over the...
Now, I will say that I don't have an original copy of Cutthroats. But I played the game anyway, so in that sense, there was piracy. But within the game, there wasn't any of that. So it depends on your definition of piracy, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we cover all the bases, I guess. I don't think we got any good mail or anything.
We got some. We got some cool things. I got notes. Do I got notes? I got notes. Martin Doherty. Wrote us an email, a nice one, saying, hi guys, nice to meet you both, albeit very briefly, at Kansas Fest 2018. Mm-hmm. I heard on episode 1 on my long drive home from K-Fest, and I just started episode 2 today. At the start of episode 2, you talked about Rick Reynolds archiving online scans of the rare Zork 1 and 2 posters. I remember that, actually, us talking about that. And anyway, he wrote in to say that, well, we said we would put that in the show notes. We never actually did. So, whoopsie. He used his Google Foo to find it anyway. I also used some Google Foo and have now placed that into the show notes.
I blame the guy who makes the show notes.
Absolutely, that guy, he said, looking at himself. So, if you have been... been, I keep saying been lately, if you have been listening every episode for that correction, then finally it has come to you in this episode. But I have thrown those links back into the show notes for episode 2, because that's where we talked about it. So they will be found back there in our ever-changing archive. And David Yao wrote us a really nice email as well to say, I just watched the YouTube video of the Kansas Fest talk where you discuss the Infocom What Do I Do Now books. On one slide, you showed a decision path tree for the forces of Krill. The chart seems to indicate a path to the cheater page, although there is no such path apart from cheating by going directly to the back of the book, which is what I did the very first time reading it, earning me negative 50 million billion zillion points. Moretzky laid a trap for me over 30 years ago, and I fell into it. And he sent us a picture of the cheater page, which I thought was awesome. And he also said that Eaten by Gru is his favorite podcast, which is sad, David. There's so many great podcasts out there.
You know, yeah, it's true. Somebody told me recently, I think it was at Kansas Fest, that this is the only podcast that they listen to. And the amount of pressure that I feel because of that, I'm just like, there are so many good podcasts, so many good podcasts. And this is the only one you listen to? Really? Okay. I'll do my best, I guess.
There are other great podcasts that I'm also on. Listen to those.
There are other great podcasts, and there are podcasts that Carrington is on.
Hey, that's a Venn diagram with a little tiny bit of overlap. A teeny tiny sliver of overlap. I am the waning gibbous of podcaster, or whoever that would be. Moon joke. But we got a lot of stuff on Twitter as well, which I thought. Misha D. Krilov tweeted that I'm a take lamp person. And so I wanted to give a shout out to that, because us take people have to stick together.
I don't even remember what hill I was dying on episode 1 about that. I think I said I was get. I don't
you were
I don't
get. Really. Okay. I am still take, and I'm still dying on that.
And Daniel Stevens is going to play Moon Mist, and he posted a lovely picture of his Commodore 64 and his printer and his disk drives, everything with the Moon Mist opening screen.
Yep, so I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also wanted to give a shout out to Daniel and a bit of encouragement. Yeah, I think he said it was something like it's the kindest and easiest of the games, but it's going to be a challenge, a delightful challenge, which it is. I dug that game. So good luck, Daniel. Hope the playthrough is going well.
You can do it.
You can do it. You can do it.
Oh, yeah. Here, I was trying to. I needed to look at. Speaking of you can do it, I had to look at the InvisiClues for something this week, and the server was down. The InvisiClues server. It was like, no! I had to figure it out myself. It was terrible.
I used InvisiClues for this as well this week, but I don't use the InvisiClues server. I just found like a copy of the InvisiClues.
A neat server that reveals them one at a time, so you don't have to read carefully.
I just carefully read. Yeah.
I should use the server. Yeah, I'm a cheater, cheating pants, so I like something that kind of keeps me from...
And speaking, kind of speaking of which, like cheating, spoilery type stuff, a friend of the show, Mark J. Blair, he tweeted, one of these days I need to finish an Infocom game so I can see what's on the other side of the spoiler fence. I assume the grass is greener there. And then Josh Malone replied, nope, that's where they keep the grooves, which I thought was delightful.
All true.
What else did we get?
I want to talk about, maybe there's more mail, but I want to talk about a couple of follow-up items.
Cool.
For a couple of things. First of all, someone, I don't know how, maybe this was on Facebook, on Twitter as well. Someone pointed me to a group on Facebook of ZIL, Zork Implementation Language.
Me too. That was Adam group. Summerfield. Let us know about the... what I would call ZIL coders group.
It's not that, but it's a group for learning, sharing, and coding Z machine programs using ZIL. ZIL stands for Zork Implementation Language and is a descendant of the artificial intelligence language Lisp. And it's basically people who are making these games.
Yeah, how cool is that, right?
It is cool. And I joined the group. I have absolutely really no intention of doing anything, but I just kind of wanted to check out the group. It's 136 members, and it's just a nice little community of people who are, you know, making Infocom games the Infocom way.
Which is totally amazing, because like you can make Infocom games using something like Inform or whatever, which basically writes out.
Those basically people are using modern quote-unquote IF programmers are doing Twine or Inform. And
exactly. But instead, these are the people doing it like as if they were just hired by Infocom. Like if you did it back in the day, you do it this way. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's super cool and super hardcore.
Anyway, so there'll be a link to that in the show notes. And anyway, I joined the group. I have no intention of really participating, but I'm just happy that they're there.
Well, maybe you can do something like you every year you seem to do one of those very few lines of basic game.
Yeah, the 10-line basic contest.
Yeah, so maybe you can do like a 10-line Zill contest. Like how small a game can you make in this language?
Maybe. That's like super... The thing about doing a program in 10 lines of basic is it's really hard. So you're asking me to do like probably one of the most advanced things you could do in Zill in a language I don't know. So,
I am.
So, yes.
Not just
so,
asking, challenging.
I respectfully decline.
Okay. That is a wise response to most of what I say.
The other thing you had mentioned some sort of cool video last week, and I said I had another one that I couldn't think of and I couldn't find, and I dug it up again, and it is called The Artists, which is a collection of 10 minute shorts that you can watch online for free about the early days of computers. There's an episode about Bill Budge guys, what's that company? Electronic Arts, that's what I meant. Now it's actually playing in my headphones and it's driving me crazy. There's an episode about D&D type games and one about Chris Crawford of Atari, and specifically there is one about Infocom, and it's just a little 10-minute thing about Infocom. The episode is called Wordsmiths, and has Jason Scott in it and other people. It's well worth watching. It's very, very cool. So the whole series is great. It's called The Artists. It's worth 2 hours of your time to watch them all, but especially watch the one called Wordsmiths about text adventures.
Well, we will have a link to that in the show notes indeed, because I'm very keen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put the link there so I can click on it.
Sure. Well, okay. Be sure to put it in there and not, you know, in don't forget to do it, and then we have to get.
I'm
going to
put the link somewhere in our show notes. It's like a little puzzle, twisty little show notes, all alike. So another thing we have to talk about is you did a very cool thing at Kansas Fest.
I did,
and then somebody else did it better.
Oh, he did. He did it better. Mm. Oh my god! Okay.
This is the best.
Mm. It's so wonderful. I'm so excited by this, Carrington. Okay, so. Previous episode at Kansas Fest, I gave a talk about the game called Adventures in Videoland, aka Roller Coaster, which was an Apple II game that was printed in Creative Computing magazine in like 1983 or something, and it was a type-in game, and it connected your LaserDisc player to your Apple II, and as you played the game, it showed cutscenes from the movie Roller Coaster. And so you go into a room and it would show you a picture from the movie that, you know, so the game was kind of built around scenes from the first 26 minutes of the movie, right?
Yeah, and it's actually super fun because you did that. Yeah. I got to play it, and it was actually quite fun to play.
Yeah. And so I gave a talk about that, and then you played it and you kind of reviewed it, and that was in a previous episode, and that's fine. And once you and I played this game, we probably doubled the number of people in the world who would play this game, right? I mean, because it required, back in the day, it required a very specific setup of hardware.
Yeah, we really may have been the second and third people to ever play this game beyond the creator.
Right, yeah. So, now here's where it gets good. Scott Lawrence heard that episode and wanted to see if he could make this game work in a web browser.
Mm-hmm.
And he did.
And he did.
So
and one of the best things about it is he did it, and then I guess he finished listening to the episode and got to the part where we said, this can't be emulated. You can't really play this anything other than a laser disc. It's never going to work any other way. And he's like, oh, lucky I didn't know it was impossible because I already went and did it. It's the best.
Yep. So basically It gives you, you open it in a web browser. It does not seem to work in Safari. So if you're on a Mac, use Chrome or Firefox or whatever. And it's in your browser window. There are three windows. One is the video window, and it takes a little bit to download the video to your computer. Another is the Apple screen. It uses some sort of Apple Soft Basic emulator in JavaScript. And the third window, you can just kind of see the code. And then you hit run, and it's exactly like playing it at Kansas Fest on the Apple II I had set up. It says, you know, what is your name? You type Kevin or whatever, and it says, you know, there's been a bomb, and it shows you the picture of the bomb being placed on the roller coaster, and it says, and you fly in to find the person who perpetrated this crime, and then you see the airplane. It works exactly like it does but without having a Laserdisc or a DVD player.
Which is so exciting because we talked about this game. I really liked playing it. I was really happy that you did this, but we had a whole episode about this, and anybody listening to that episode would have been basically teased by this game because there would have essentially been no way for them to play it.
Right. We didn't even put a spoiler fence in that episode because we figured no one's going to be able to
play it. But now you totally can. So sorry about the spoilers. you can just go to your Fire browser, go to a link. We'll have a link to the show notes. We'll also have a link to a video demo of it. But really, just go to the play version. It doesn't take that long to play this game, and it's super fun. And it's amazing that he did this. I'm very impressed.
Yes, it's very impressive. And you know, and he's already planning. You know, anybody could take this and extend it. I mean, now it would be super easy to extend the game to have more rooms and use the whole movie, or do a completely different movie. Or I was asking him recently if this could. If we could use an Atari emulator and do some other things that my Atari friends have been thinking about doing that involve not video actually, but audio. But you could put audio on a CD, you know, a virtual CD instead of a virtual Laserdisc, and then you know do things with audio. And so it's really very cool and exciting. And I'm super surprised that this exists. And just on its own, the virtual Laserdisc emulator that works in a browser is amazing, but the fact that he got it integrated with the code, he didn't change a line of my code, so it's just magic.
Yeah, it's just magic, and he got to work, and I'm very impressed, and it's awesome, and we'll have a link in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Yes, I would really be interested in hearing thoughts of other people who play that game.
So. Mm-hmm. Yes, because now people can run it and play it. It's a small commitment compared to any Infocom game.
No, yeah.
So and it's fun and it's different, and you can just play it in your browser. You could stop this podcast right now and just play it in your browser.
Mm-hmm. Never come back to this podcast.
No, because this could be your favorite. This could be your favorite podcast.
Could be the only one you listen to.
Could be.
Should we talk about Cutthroats?
Yes, we shall.
Cutthroats is a game by Infocom. It was released in September 1984. The category was Tales of Adventure. It was credited to Mike Berlin, who also created Suspended, Infidel, and Zork, the Undiscovered Underground.
And Utopos, or Utopos, which is a game I have wanted to play for ages.
Did you have a stroke? What was
it? It's a game called Utopos. Like it's Ootopos or something.
I don't know what
that is. And it's this game that comes up quite a bit, 8-bit computer game. I think it's on the Apple II. I know it's on the Apple II, but I might be on other things. And it's one of those ones that's like a grail game for me, one I've really wanted to play. And it's outside of Infocom, but he's the creator of that one too.
Published by Sentient Software in 1981. Yeah. Oh, it looks cute. It's got graphics.
It's a graphic adventure game I've long wanted to play.
Never
and so,
heard of it.
Yeah, he's the one behind that.
If you want to, we could go off our...
Yeah,
our,
we'll see. We'll see. Well, we see what we think of our first game of his played.
We'll see. Anyway, cute. Mike Berlin and Jerry Wolper, who also created Bureaucracy. He was worked on Bureaucracy, I guess, along with everybody else. So, Cutthroats. There is on the box. There is a picture of a guy underwater in a mask and one of those things called the breathing things.
A rebreather. Yeah.
Or a scuba tank or something.
But also a hose.
A hose is not connected to him and it's bubbling out and he's got these big eyes like he's going, oh man, I'm gonna die now. So that's what's on the box of Cutthroats. Back of the box says, you're about to get yourself into very deep trouble. You're a backwater island's top diver and foremost expert on local shipwrecks. What makes you perfect for the job is a band of the island's shadiest characters has in mind for you. What makes you perfect for the job is a band of the island's shadiest characters has in mind for you. That doesn't make sense. It's a simple business proposition. All you have to do is salvage a fortune and sunken treasures. You stand to gain millions. The only drawback is it could cost you your neck, because to successfully recover the treasure, you have to survive the perils of diving in unknown waters and the even greater danger of an untrustworthy crew. But none of that will stop you from taking the plunge. You're the type who believes that when the stakes are this high, even when the odds are this low, it's worth running the risks of dealing with cutthroats.
Cutthroats.
Cutthroats. That's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
In the box.
Mm-hmm. And then the Browsy is True Tales of Adventure, which
right.
talks about a whole bunch of things, danger at 50 fathoms.
It's a little magazine, yeah. like 8-page magazine thing.
And it's got ads for stuff like spearfishing bits and flashlights that are important, and kind of gives you
right.
hints for the kind of things you might want to
yeah,
do when
bit.
You're diving, and silly
yeah.
stories.
And there's another little Browsy called... what is it? The four shipwrecks of Hardscrabble Island, which is kind of a little booklet thing that provides information. Actually, it's a book that you have in the. It's one of those things where you try to read it in the game. It's just like, you know, this book is included in your game mm-hmm. package. But
and
basically,
it describes four different shipwrecks, and you would get a map as well to those four shipwrecks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, kind of some background. I kind of enjoyed. The Browsies aren't very good in this game. I mean, there's no, like, swizzle sticks, and there's no, I don't know, fake Portuguese escudos or whatever. But I liked the little stories of these four ships and, like, how they met their fates. I thought that was interesting.
I liked it, too. I liked the True Tales of Adventure magazine. I liked the Browsy. You get an Outfitters International... price list thing as well that tells you the kind of stuff you can buy and what it costs. Also, it's a whole bunch of stuff that kind of is needed in the game. So it's a lot of copy protection in this Browsy / Feeny stuff.
Oh, and another tide table. Let me tell you that. I'm going to go back and I just want to go back in a time machine and tell the people at Infocom, tide tables in text adventure games are not fun. They're not fun.
But
was
in this case, it's strictly used
as... It wasn't fun in Sherlock, and it wasn't fun here. Actually,
it's copy protection. It's strictly because they tell you, hey, we'll meet at high tide, and you have to look it up to know when that is.
Get there early and type...
And wait. That's what everybody does. I just get there super early and twiddle my thumbs for 5 hours.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot of paperwork with this game.
It's weird that the game has a lot of meetings and there's a lot of paperwork in the feelies.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. And that one of my notes about there's sort of two parts of this game. There's the first part, section A, is getting ready for the dive. All the things you've got to do. You got to get. You figure out what stuff you need. You got to meet your people. You have all these meetings. There's literally
three or four literal meetings.
Yeah, yes. You have to. You know, it's just like, oh, we're gonna meet at the saloon or whatever it is. You know, we're gonna. And then there's like, oh, it's
the shanty.
We gotta go meet at the lighthouse. And there's literally, it's just like first half of the game is going to meetings and getting stuff, and then the second half of the game is the actual dive.
Is the actual adventure where you go diving to a shipwreck?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, a lot of preparation. You never play. It's not like if you played Zork and like the first part of it was just like, I don't know, taking a horseback ride out to the west of house and you know where and acquire going to the store and buying your brass lantern. You know, it's just like.
I agree that in a real sense it is divided into two halves. The first half on the island where you figure out what you got to do and gear up, and then the second half, which is really for me longer because there's more puzzles involved, doing a dive. After the spoiler fence, I'm going to argue that there are three parts to the game, and then that's a major downside to the game. Well, not major, but there's a downside to the game that it's actually three parts instead of two. But I can't really talk about it in detail to where the other side is part of the fence, where grass is greener and the grues are kept.
Sure. Oh, the grues are green. Yeah.
The grues are greener.
So there's two sections of the game. And then I don't think this is a spoiler at all to say that second section of the game, there's actually two. And it's
it's kind of a spoiler because it'd be easy to not know there's two.
Yes,
exactly. I didn't know there was two.
Finished the game and I was just like, huh, this game was kind of short. That's weird. And then it wasn't. And then when I'm finished with a game, I start like reading reading everything about it. You know, I'll read the InvisiClues and stuff. And that's when I discovered there's a whole nother second scenario that you can do, which is not. It didn't mention the back of the box. There's two scenarios. It didn't say it in any of the paper. It was a complete surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I thought there were going to be four shipwrecks to deal with because you get a map that shows you four shipwrecks.
Right.
And then it turned out you only deal with one shipwreck. I'm like, okay. So I got to figure out which of the four, and it's like a little puzzle in a sense. And then after I finished, I started reading about the game, and I started reading about like puzzle solutions, unfortunately, one of which was a solution to a puzzle I didn't even encounter using an object I never used. And I realized, well, hold on. This is dealing with a completely different shipwreck. So I kind of spoiled myself a little bit for a puzzle. And that's how I learned there's another shipwreck. There's this point at the game where it kind of flips a coin randomly and you're going to get either A or B.
Right.
And if you don't know that, it'd be very easy to play this game and miss a whole, essentially half of the game.
And I bet it totally could have happened to people back in the day who bought this game and probably were pretty disappointed with the relatively short gameplay. And basically at one point, the other guy, your cohort, your coworker, your whatever, he's either going to show you a plate or he's going to show you a coin. And if he shows you a plate, you go to one shipwreck. And if he shows you a coin, you go to the other shipwreck. There's really no clue anywhere that, that it could go another way.
Nope. I got one of the items and I thought it was kind of a puzzle to figure out which of the four shipwrecks does this relate to.
Right.
And actually it's no, you've just basically, like I said, flipped a coin and you've got one of two different possible routes you can take from then on.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a little weird. But I mean, it's an advantage too, because like with Moon Mist, which had four different versions of the game, so you get a shorter game but you can play multiple versions, I guess that was the thinking here. But Moon Mist tells you right from the beginning there's multiple versions of this. It tells you in the documentation at the beginning you pick a color, and like it makes it very obvious there's multiple paths through. This kind of goes out of its way to hide the fact that there's multiple paths through, and that midway you're going to branch,
which seems like a marketing problem, really. It should have said in the back of the box or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It was just weird. So yeah, when I finished the game the first time, the first scenario, and I didn't know there was a second scenario at that point, I wrote down, this felt like a third of a game. It felt like, remember we played Border Zone, and there, that game is actually broken into three separate scenarios, and they tell you, very clearly.
You've got to do them in any order, really.
In any order, but there's three spy-related scenarios in that game. And I felt like this felt like one Border Zone scenario. I was like, huh. And then they're like, oh, there is another thing you can do. And I did that. And I was just like, okay, well, now it feels like two thirds of a game, I guess. So that was weird.
Yep.
It was weird for me.
I thought it was weird that you don't go to all four shipwrecks, which I guess is kind of spoilery, but we were talking about how there's two of them. So
you can.
Yeah, but it's not part of the, yeah, you can, but there's not really puzzles involved. There's really two to do, in a sense.
Yeah. But if you really want to explore the other shipwrecks where there's no treasure.
No reason to be there.
No reason to go. Yeah.
Speaking of four, there are basically four people. Like, this is a game in which there are other people to interact with, and because they are cutthroats, there's like one guy named Weasel, one guy named Pete the Rat, and Pete the Rat has an eye patch, and there's a parrot that also has an eye patch. So these are the sorts of people you're going to encounter, and also a guy named Helvin. And my very first note in this game is, what kind of name is Helvin? So I don't know, if maybe we have listeners who are named Helvin. I have never encountered that name before.
No, me neither.
Yep.
And
Johnny Red. So it's like good names for Elvin. For this yeah. kind of game.
Yeah.
So you have a meeting with Johnny Red and yeah. Pete the Rat and the Weasel at the lighthouse.
Yeah. So I mean, it's the first part of the game is just. I mean, really, just going to meetings and being at the right place at the right mm-hmm. time. And,
but a couple of
and,
puzzles, and or then, one, and then you've one got a, big puzzle, kind of. But there's puzzles.
This whole game has three puzzles. This whole entire game, I would call it three puzzles, one of which is a surprise puzzle. And I don't know. I didn't feel like it was a...
It is more narrative, more like interactive fiction mm-hmm. than... loose collection of puzzles. Definitely. There are fewer puzzles to do, and it's more of a game on rails in a sense where like, mm-hmm. here you go, because a lot of things happen in certain times where they say, let's, you know, go do a thing, like go get money or whatever. And let's meet at the lighthouse at 10.
Right.
So that just starts a ticking clock where for the next 90 minutes, you have to essentially get money and then go to the lighthouse. It's a story on rails. And that's not yeah. necessarily a bad thing because it's trying to tell a tale of adventure. But come to Infocom games for the puzzles.
Right.
And this game doesn't give you a lot of those.
And the first half of it is not a tale of adventure. It's a tale of running errands.
It is very much a tale of running errands.
It really is. And you've got to go...
Errands I didn't want to run. I don't know about you, like, but this group of people who are clearly untrustworthy and disreputable tell me, right. hey, do you want in? And of course I say no. I'm like, I'm going to hang out with you people. And that just ends the game.
Right. Yeah.
Turns out you have to get involved, which I guess I should have thought.
I don't want to spoil anything at all, but it's just like you've got to go to the place and get the thing. And then but you can't be seen with the thing, so you've got to go to the other place with the other to get the other thing. And then you have to go back to the other thing to get the thing that you can't be seen with. And it was just like trudging along this stupid island, moving stuff from place to place, and it wasn't an adventure. It was just busy work and I had to do it many times for stupid reasons, and I did not enjoy the, if it was all shipwreck stuff and there was four shipwrecks or six shipwrecks or something, this might have been a better game. But
I definitely like the shipwreck exploration part better, and I think anybody who gets this game is gonna like that better, because you come to this game for that. I was never really interested in Cutthroats, to be honest. Like, that's why I picked it. In fact, I was like, hey, we played a game I really liked, let's try one I've never really looked forward to. I think of the entire Infocom canon, this may be the bottom of the list of ones I've been interested in. Like, I just, it never appealed to me for some reason. Yeah. So I think the people to whom it does appeal, though, would have bought this game because they're interested. Like, when you read the tale of that, you're gonna go diving for treasure. You're gonna hang with people. Like, they want that adventure part, and that really is only the second half of the game. And the first half is a little bit more busy work, a little bit, like you say, running errands. And I don't think a lot of people who are interested in the game will be as interested in that first half, I think.
Yeah.
Though the parent does say it would gladly accept a hard biscuit today if you will accept payment on Tuesday, which I thought was funny.
I missed that. It was the...
it's a wimpy quote.
The wimpy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The parent with an eye patch, which makes this game sound funnier than it is. This is not a humor game. The browser's not funny. The game's not funny, which is a little disappointing. We've had some really funny ones, and I think maybe this game would have been better if it had a bit more humor in it, but it's here for hard adventure. Like, that's what this game is offering.
This game was not that hard and didn't have much adventure.
Oh, I found the game, some of it hard. I had to cheat. I found this game hard.
I had to cheat a little bit, but I felt both times I had to cheat, I thought this was not fair. I sometimes, you know, you cheat and you go like, oh, all right, yeah, clever. You know, I didn't get it. But both times I had to cheat, I was just like, that was stupid and I didn't like it. But I felt that this game didn't have much humor. I felt it didn't have much joy. I felt like this
that's a good way to put it.
I felt like this was had all the fun of a ninth grade homework assignment where the student does the job and gets it in on time and wrote the paper to the specified length and hit all the points they were supposed to, and yet didn't enjoy it. And it's not a fun paper to read, and it's just, you know, I felt like it was a joyless work.
That is so funny. In my notes, I have, I don't think the people who made this game enjoyed the game. I think this was an assignment more than a task of joy. I wrote that, I had the exact same impression, that it didn't seem like the people who were making this game were super enthusiastic about the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there just, it came down to, even in little things, I don't know, if you type, some of the responses, frankly, seemed curt, you know, just like snippy. And it's just like, normally in a Infocom game, it will, if you try to do something stupid, it will come back with a funny response or, you know, something clever. But if I typed open chest with sword, it says, with a sword? Question mark, exclamation point, question mark. It's just like, F you, you know? Just, yeah, I would try to pry open a chest with a sword. There's nothing weird about that, you know? And it was just like rude little responses. I'm just like, it made me, I don't know, just felt like it was in a, game was in a bad mood.
In a sense, yes. Like I have to admit, I think, like, before we played the game, if I was to list all the games that I hadn't played yet, and even the ones I had played, in order, which Infocom game least appealed to me, it was Cutthroat. So I have to remember that I'm going in negatively biased.
Right.
That said, having now played the game, this easily ranks as my least favorite of the ones we played. I'm counting, like, including all of them, including the kid submarine game we played. Like, of all of them, if I had to replay them all, but I got to pick one to not replay, it would be this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which isn't to say that I hated the game. It's like pizza. It's like one of those things where playing an Infocom game is better than not playing an Infocom game. So I'm coming across maybe more negative than I intended. I like the process of playing an Infocom game. There were some things here to enjoy. But overall, this isn't one I would seriously recommend. I think this is a game to be played by Infocom completionists rather than a game to be played by Infocom fans or people interested in Infocom games. I certainly would not recommend this to be anybody's first game because it might turn you off Infocom games completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see, what else? I thought the scoring was weird. After 20 minutes of playing, I mean, literally my first 20 minutes of playing, I hadn't looked at the feelies. I just loaded up Zoom and started. How did you play, by the way? Were you on Zoom? Or
I played on Zoom. Yeah, played just on Zoom with a PDF of the feelies and stuff.
Okay. So 20 minutes into the game, I had a score of 50 out of 250. After 20 minutes of just walking around the town, just like, you know, picking my nose and figuring out, like, you know,
maybe get 50 points for that, because my notes show I finished after playing for a half an hour or so, I died with a score of zero. So you dove in and did better than me. I died and got the score of 0 points. I got chicken of the sea as my rank. Like after like a half an hour of playing. So I don't know how you got your 50 points so fast, nose picker.
Yeah.
I found a bug in the game, but I can't talk about it until after the spoiler fence. Okay. My first time finding a bug. I found a bug.
Really? Good. Yep. Oh, I look excited to hear about it. I found one. I actually just mailed Nathan about it right before we started. I'm not sure if it's more of a parser issue. And maybe it's something that's in many Infocom games, but I had not noticed it before. It happened when the name of an object also happens to be a verb. So I would say, you know, take lamp and other thing and drill, and it would say, you know, lamp taken, what do you want to drill? Like, what? No, what? suddenly thought I was talking about to drill instead of
to drill the lamp, in a sense.
Yeah,
right.
yeah So anyway, that happened a couple of different times with different objects. So I'm excited to hear about your bug. You don't normally do that.
I know.
The
way I stumble through these games, the odds of me finding a bug is pretty remote.
Right. I felt like, and without getting into spoilers, I felt like there was a couple of times where there was a solution that they wanted to solve the puzzle. And when I came up with a really good way to avoid it, it didn't accept my solution. Maybe we should just talk about that after the thing.
But yeah, because I had 2 points where I found a solution to a puzzle. There was a puzzle. I figured out the solution. It turns out in retrospect, I had figured out the correct solution, but I could not phrase it the way the game wanted. And that happened twice. Yes. 2 different times I had to go to Infocom or to InviziClues that would then tell me, like, here's what to do. I'm like, but that's what I'm trying to do.
I think we might be talking about the same thing.
That's frustrating.
It's like it wanted an incantation of these words in these order, and, and that's how you solve the puzzle. And it felt like very just like Scott Adams cheaply made, you know, what kind of cheap IF crap is this, that it wanted this exact phrase in order to solve the puzzle. It's like, I was 90% there, you know?
Yep. If I'm using, like, the object, like, the direct object and the indirect object, and a verb that fits together in the right place, give me credit that I'm clearly trying to solve this puzzle the right way. And it's saying, well, no, I want this version of the verb and this phrasing. I'm like, And that happened 2 different times with InviziClues. That was highly frustrating.
Yeah. I was surprised when the game ended. I knew I had gotten the treasure, and I had done everything I needed to do in order to safely get the treasure. And I got up on the boat, and it was just like, you know, you win, you're going to be rich, 250 points, game's over, boom. And I was just like, really? Like, I mean, I thought there might be trying to, you know, the boat trip back, and there might be pirates or something.
Totally, because they built up the fact that this crew is so shady. And it is the case that the crew is shady, and you do deal with that during the journey. But it really just, like, you raise up the treasure, and if you get it right, it says, yep, you win. And everything's good, and nobody will betray you after that, and everything just works fine. Which is highly unlikely that everybody gets back to shore with this treasure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it felt like that's where the adventure is, you know? It's trying to survive the
as the boat sails off without you.
Right, or, yeah, anyway, so I like I said, it felt like 2/3 of the game. I mean, a trip home, you know, with whatever, fighting someone who's trying to take the treasure for himself, or pirates, or who knows, but... yeah, so I was genuinely surprised when the game just ended.
Mm-hmm. Murdered by pirates is good.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at that as well. I was also a little surprised, like, the game clearly, like we talked about, the game is on rails, and it clearly wants to tell the story it wants to tell, which is not an inherently bad thing. Like, that's the story. I shouldn't complain that that's the story it wants to give. It's like if I pick up a Cutthroat's book, I shouldn't complain that it's not a sci-fi book or it's not a romantic comedy or whatever. Like, the thing is what it is, and this is telling the story it wants to tell. But within that narrative, it makes a couple of choices I think are weird. And I don't think this is spoilery, but the game kicks off, like, right away. Helvin slips you a thing, says, like, basically it's hard-boiled detective kind of stuff. Like, this guy shows up at your door late at night and says, hold this piece of paper for me, and goes outside and immediately is killed. And so Helvin gets killed in, like...
Helvin does not last past the first move of this game.
So, like, basically the first move. Boom, that's a nice point. So Helvin gets killed, and that kicks off this adventure where you're going to go through all this stuff and team up with these bad people and hopefully find a shipwreck full of treasure, blah, blah, blah. But at no point, like, this is your buddy Helvin shows up. At no point do you do anything into, like, let's see who killed Helvin or get revenge for Helvin. Nothing. I kept thinking this is going to come back. And at the very, very end of the game, it basically says, hey, you got all the treasure and you think of Helvin and you hope his soul is resting easier now. I'm like, why would his soul be resting easier now? You got treasure, Helvin got screwed, and you have no idea who did it. So, like... It's weird.
Yeah.
The framing device is weird to me, and it seems incomplete.
I agree.
I have a lot of negative things to say about this game, which is unfortunate, because, again, it wasn't slog, but it is a disappointing game. Like,
The first half was a slog. The second half was...
Because the second half has some real tension. I even have notes about how I was, like, underwater in a shipwreck, and you come across, like, a giant squid, and I just popped to take a note. It's like, you know, I am feeling some actual tension as I explore the shipwreck, like being aware of my airline and the giant squid and trying to solve puzzles. And
that's
like
a sign of a good game.
Absolutely. There's some real tense moments, and that is a really good element, but it is, again, framed by some disappointing stuff.
Yeah. I agree. Got to talk about stats. It's not a big game. 68 rooms, where the average is 81. Vocabulary is 790, where the average is.
And remember, 68 rooms is going to include two different shipwrecks. And if you don't know there's a second shipwreck, you might play a version of this game that has like 40 rooms.
Yeah, it's true. Did you feel vocabulary was small, 790 words? I said rooms, but I meant words. Did you feel limited by the vocabulary?
Absolutely, because, like I said, two different times I had to look up, how to phrase a thing. Like, I knew a solution, and I figured I must have it wrong. It turns out I do have it wrong. I just didn't like the way I'm saying things. That happened multiple times, in addition to a game filled with learning by death. Holy cow, do you have to learn by death in this game, which is disappointing.
One of them is just unfair. We'll talk about it.
Absolutely unfair. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, fair. I did. I would unfair. Say I found it limiting. Yes. Yeah. And also the bug I found was essentially a parser error that's using the word again wrong or whatever. So.
And I wanted to look up, and the number of objects is only 21, where 36 is average.
And again, really you have a bunch of objects you need on your shipwreck adventure, but those objects are different depending on the shipwreck you're going to. And so let's say hypothetically there's five things you need to bring with you, and they're different five things, which means of these objects, five of them you won't even need if you only play like one time through. So again, the game is smaller than even the number of objects would imply.
Right. It is the smallest number of objects except for Sea Stalker, another underwater game. I guess you just don't need many objects underwater, perhaps.
Guess not.
Sea Stalker only has 15, but that was a kid's game, you know, supposed to be easy. So this is really the smallest of the adult games, and I don't mean adult like Leather Cottages of Phobos, I just mean not a kid's game. So, not a large game, but that's okay. So, anything else before we hit the spoiler fence?
Nope.
So you finished it. Did you finish it twice?
I did finish it twice. Yeah. And honestly, after finishing it the first time, I wasn't even keen to play it again. I just said, oh, hey, the game is shorter than I thought. Let me do it again. But the second time through was kind of more the same, except with different puzzles. And so that was good. Like the second half of the game, the other shipwreck is a different shipwreck. It's not just literally the same. So that was good. Different sorts of puzzles, different sorts of solutions, different sorts of gear. It really is different. So that's awesome. But it really is more of the same. Like, that didn't make it better having to do it that way. It would have been better having the game, you go through the one shipwreck, and then that leads you to the second shipwreck, and just, like, make it one longer narrative.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why it couldn't have just been done that way. It's not a game I would recommend to people unless they're really keen on diving for some reason, or you've played a ton of Infocom games and you just want to play another one and you've used up all the better ones. But other than that, like, it's not a game I'd recommend.
Yeah.
And I think the first time I've said that.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't recommend this. I did not. There was a lot of it I didn't enjoy. And some of it I did. It wasn't terrible all the way through. It wasn't like Sherlock level bad. But
I liked Sherlock, but this one, I would give a pass.
So this is the first one, I think, that I didn't like that you also didn't like.
Yeah.
Because there's been several that I didn't like that you loved.
I think this might be the first one I didn't like. I pretty much have just liked these games. So, not that keen on this one.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know how much is that as I went in negative. I went in thinking I'm not interested in this one. I worry maybe I spoiled it for myself. So who knows? Grain of salt on my opinions here. But overall, though, having now played it, my honest review is I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. Agreed.
So I think we should hop over. We should dive under the spoiler fence.
And
start talking about bugs in the parser and solutions to squid difficulties.
So, all right. So, if you want to play this crappy game, I don't mean it like that. But if you want to play this game, stop listening now, because the next thing we're going to do is we're going to start talking about solutions to puzzles and things like that, and we're going to spoil the game for you. So,
but you know what? Before we do that, we got to pick another next game for people that don't move on.
Actually, you know what? Chris Otto, I believe. I'm going to let him pick the next game. He tweeted us.
Excellent.
He said, "I fear you will soon be cursing Cutthroats as the worst Infocom game you have played. It is perfect, a perfect IF simulation of the drudgery of everyday life. You should play Infidel right afterwards because it's Infidel's best shot to seem passable by comparison."
Oh, no. But so hey, he's giving his advice, so I think we should do it.
I think we should, too. We're going to play Infidel.
Excellent. Infidel is one I am looking forward to because I love Egyptian stuff. And I think Infidel is one that involves like adventure in a pyramid or something. And that does appeal to me. So I'm all about that.
Yeah, lately I've wanted to play Infidel. So I'm interested to see if it's as not good as Chris implies. I don't know. But I figure the last game, what was the last game we played? Moon Mist, I did not like. This game I did not particularly like, so I'll go 3 for 3.
I liked Moon Mist, and I'm looking forward to Infidel, so I think my streak of one is going to come to an end.
Okay, excellent. All right, so spoiler fence now. Beep boop.
Beep boop, we are spoiling. Time for spoilings. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about my bug first.
Yeah,
talk. Because it's not much of a bug, but it's my first one I've encountered that was a bug. So it's because I'm playing it in Zoom, and maybe if I played this on a real vintage computer, this wouldn't happen. Yeah. But again is broken in this game, or at least the G command, the G for again. I finally started using these cool hipster single letter things that other people use. So for instance, and we got to talk about the envelope, so here's my note from the bug. It happened in the cruise quarter on the Nightwind, time 1:32. I took notes because I'm like a professional bug reporter. Said, hide envelope under mattress. The envelope is now hidden under the mattress. Wait, time passes. G, because I want to wait again. It won't fit.
Really?
Yeah. So if you say again, and this happened a few times in this, it skips back to like the first time you use, last time you use something. Wait is ignored for time pass. Like G, it won't fit. Okay, wait, time passes. Wait, time passes. G, it won't fit. It'll skip way back to your previous wait. So wait can't be used by again, but it's also ignored by again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That seems like a legit bug.
I think so too. I was really proud of finding a bug.
Good job. Good job.
It's my first one.
Good. Well done. I have a lot to talk about now that we're past the spoiler fence. Mm-hmm. Number one.
Are we going to talk about like on the island and how McGinty is a pain?
Well, McGinty is a pain. This
it's not McGinty. You can't carry around a passbook without him psychically knowing you have it.
Yeah, he's right. This McGinty guy. If he sees you with the passbook, he like clings to you like something clean.
And basically, and it ruins your game. Like you have to shake him, right? And you can't shake him. Right. But why does he see that you have it? I can see him seeing that you're wearing a shirt or something, but a passbook, like we're talking about a bank passport. Well, a bank passport. That would be in your pocket. How would he know you even have it on you?
I don't know. And also, if you have your flippers or any of your dive gear, he knows.
See,
you're
that seems reasonable to me. Right. Like if he's going to get suspicious, if he sees you go and want to do something, he'll go and basically rent the boat that you wanted and ruins it for you. So it's kind of like this puzzle you have to get past McGinty. Right. But it bugged me. It was like trial and error. I had to figure out like what is it. Like I got rid of all the dive gear. I got rid of everything. I'm like, why is he still on to me? And it's because you've got your bank passbook on you. Not that he sees you go in the bank, just if you have the bank passbook on you and he sees you, your game is ruined.
And which and is at one point nonsense. I tried sense, which was one of the few clever things in the game. I put the passbook down when I was done using it. I think I just dropped into the floor of the bank or something. Okay. And then McGinty comes in and he picks it up and he takes it. And then he's on you like glue for the rest of the game and you ruin the game.
But that makes sense because he would have known you took out that money.
Right.
That seems fair.
Yeah. Also, if you're in the bank and you just type withdrawal, it takes that as exit. And you just all of a sudden you're standing out in the street outside the bank.
Oh, I did like withdraw $500 or whatever.
Yeah,
like
that's what you're supposed to do. But I just type withdrawal. I thought maybe
I'm just going
to
withdraw from this bank.
Yeah, anyway. So I thought I don't know, bordering on a bug. In a bank, you can use the word withdraw without leaving the bank, I think. So, McGinty, so I'm just gonna jump to the surprise ending of this game because it's gonna circle back to McGinty. This game expects you to fail the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I
100% it's a learn by death game, which is totally unfair.
Which is totally unfair. I got the treasure. I ascended and got to the boat, and it says, you know, you are so excited, you know, and you got the treasure and blah blah, and you fall asleep on the deck, and somebody slits your throat in your sleep,
mm-hmm.
and you are dead. And so I'm just like, huh, okay. So I'm.
But so, what you don't realize is you were a dead man walking for a long time because you've been you didn't a dead do something man way earlier.
So, but I didn't. First, I didn't know this, and I'm just like, okay. The first one I did was the plate. I don't remember the name of the boat, but getting the plates. And there's a room underwater with air in it. It's filled with air. So I right before I was done in that wreck, I tried to sleep. I was in a room with air, so I'm just like, I typed sleep so that when I went up on deck, I didn't fall asleep out of exhaustion.
And oh, it says, smart. Oh, okay.
It said, you're wide awake. You can't sleep. And then two moves later, I fall asleep and then get killed.
Okay. So, yes, which bugs me, and that happens in both versions of the game because I have that in my notes as well. Like on the ship at night, your mind is too active to let you sleep, and it's followed almost immediately by, in no time, the rhythm of the ocean lulls you to sleep. I'm like, yeah. What the hell? Yeah. I was too wide awake.
So basically, that solution wasn't a solution, and so you're expected to you die, but you surprise death at the end because somebody slits your throat, and you discover that. Something at some previous point of the game, there's something you needed to do in order to keep, and it's pretty, I think, pretty obvious who killed you, but because there's a guy walking around with a knife the whole time, but
right. And you're hanging out with a guy named Weasel.
something you did or failed to do sometime previously in the game will prevent you from dying at the end, and it turns out, and this is the thing that I really thought was unfair, is in all those meetings at the beginning of the game, there's another meeting. There's a secret meeting
that you had to spot.
Weasel and McGinty that you are expected to find out about, sneak in on, watch. You know, I had no clue that was happening, and winning the game really relies on knowing that meeting happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting into McGinty's office, which I guess you didn't have to see the meeting in order to sneak into McGinty's office to steal the envelope. But I just hate games. First of all, I felt it was learned by death, and that was an unfair... I had finished the game, basically, and then you have to go back to basically the beginning of the game and replay.
Essentially the beginning of the game.
It was almost as bad as like Hitchhikers, you know, you don't have the pocket fluff, you can't win the game, you know, start over. It was that level of just like, I've got to start over and play a stupid game again. And also I don't like these games. I tend to not like the games where we have to follow people around. And this turns out it had to be that. Like, that's why I'm, you know, suspended and... Not suspended, deadline and stuff. You've got to follow, sneak people around, and
Moon Mist is a lot of following people.
Yeah,
around.
Just like whatever. That's a thing that you have to do in these games. It's not one of my favorite activities, but it turns out this is one of those games you got to follow people around, discover the secret meeting, and that wasn't fair. It just so I cheated to find out like what was going on because I just wasn't interested in trying every permutation of. Did I have the passbook at the wrong time in order to find out why I died 100 moves later?
In fact, we talked earlier on the other side of spoiler fence that I had died very early in the game with 0 points. And it was McGinty who killed me because really early in the game, I found you could go in the alley and then you could break in through the window into McGinty's office. And if he catches you, he's quite displeased.
I didn't like that.
But I broke in the office without him there and there's like nothing there. And so I kind of put into my head... You can break in here, but there's like nothing to look for. But it is the case. It's just that he needs to get the envelope from the weasel and he'll leave it in his office. So if you break in early, it's not there. And that's an interesting thing about the game, I guess, in a sense that the characters are moving around on their own timeline, and so like at certain times, like between 9:30 and 10, McGinty will be in a certain place, and I guess that's kind of neat, the moving chess pieces stuff. But
like you said, it's on rails. Yeah, they're gonna do their little things on rails. They're just gonna have their meetings and their secret meetings.
Yeah.
So,
but I have the exact same problem, and I think everybody would get to the end of this and not know they had to see the secret meeting, see something get passed, break into McGinty's office, and then you find that envelope, and then you have to like have the envelope and hide the envelope, and then right. use the envelope, and it's like,
yeah,
unfair puzzle, unfun yeah. puzzle, and mm-hmm. clearly just like lobbing a time bomb to the end of the because it's one thing. I don't think it's unfair if there's a hidden thing or a piece of the packaging that you need to have. And if you don't have it or you get it wrong because you basically stolen the game, then it like kills you later. Like if maybe in game it implies a certain location to go dive for the ships. And but if you've got the box, you could look in and get the real longitude and latitude. That seems fair if mean, but this is the kind of thing that like with the game, with everything, it's just like this hidden place. You better just happen to be standing in a certain area to see this little secret meeting at a certain time. And if you don't, you're simply going to lose. And there'll mm-hmm. be no hint that you're going to lose. And right. and essentially you've lost at move 30 and you're not going to know until move
yes.
400.
Right. And
I really don't like that.
No. Yeah, I don't like that either. This game also has the old trope that we've seen many times before of going through a one-way door, essentially, not knowing what you're going to face on the other side or what tools you're going to need, but needing to have the right tools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another learn by death thing. Like when you on one particular shipwreck, you're going to need the flashlight and the shark repellent and the, I don't remember what else, the
like the Geiger counter or whatever.
The
what was the it? Other one you're going to need the magnet thingy.
Right. One you need the electromagnet and the other one you need the metal detector.
But you won't know which one is which. Like
right.
And you can't afford to have both.
Right. Yeah. So, it's like when one of the spell casting games you needed to have certain spells in your brain before you fought the bad guy, and you know you have to play it a few times to figure it out. And so I don't know, I think it's kind of tired.
I still don't like that. I still would have preferred it to be I don't think it wouldn't have bothered me if it was the case that you could afford to have both, you have both, they're both up in the ship, but you can only take one at a time. So you dive down, you get to a point where you're like, oh nope, I don't want the Geiger counter, I want the electromagnet. So you go back up to the ship, swap them and go down. That would seem fair to me. Maybe a little annoying, but you've got the stuff. But it's much more annoying to be, you're out at sea, you're diving, too bad, you better restore. Because you can't win because you didn't bring a Geiger counter that you didn't know you'd need.
Right. It was a metal detector, not a Geiger counter.
Oh, sure, a metal detector. Sorry, yes, of course, not a Geiger.
It was just like
I thought it was thinking it was a Geiger counter because it kept clicking, and it was only later I realized, oh, right, yes, it's helping me find the coins.
Right.
Like, why do I have this clicking box?
The radioactive coins.
Totally. So when I first got it, I was like, I guess it's a Geiger counter. It clicks. But yes, I did eventually figure out it's the one where you're going for the coins, and it helps you find which cask or whatever has them. So.
Right.
That's a thing. That's another one that bugged me. Another cheating one. Oh, so anyway, mm-hmm. the cheating I used when I had to mm-hmm. look up stuff in Infocom and then find out in VisiClues, and it turns out I had the solution. It just, I couldn't phrase it right. One was going through one of the, I don't remember which shipwreck it was. Let's see. So I think it was the coin one where you find those bars, those javelin type things, and you have to brace the bunks with a bar, because like if you go through the one area, the bunks will slide over and they'll pinch your air hose.
There's bunks, and you can get the bunks out of the way and you can go through the doorway, but then the bunks slowly fall back to where they were before.
Right. And so I figured, okay, I'm going to brace them with one of these bars. And I tried brace bunks with bar. Nope. Place bar in bunks. Nope. Insert bar into bunks. Insert bar between bunks. Block bunks with bar. None of those work. So I figured, okay, that's not the solution. No. I was trying to do the right thing. You have to say put bar under bunks.
Right. Or wedge the bar under the bunks. Those are the two phrases it wants and nothing else will work.
Yeah. And so that bugged me. Wedge seems more fair. I guess I never found that one. I finally looked up in VisiClues and told me, say, put bar under bunks. I'm like, okay. That was clearly what I was trying to do, game. And another one was you have the, there's like, you find the chest and there's the two chests and you think you have the right one. You can find with the metal detector and or Geiger counter. And there's a hole, and it's pretty obvious. You've got to get the chest, you know, through the hole.
Yeah.
And so I tried push chest into hole, push chest through hole, put chest in hole, push chest to hole. And I was like, oh, I guess you don't do that. Yeah, you do. It's looking push chest west.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, really? That was very annoying to look up that was the solution. And that's not fun. It shouldn't be. Like, that's Scott Adams level. Like, it shouldn't be an Infocom game. I've got a chest. I've got a hole. That's an exit. I'm clearly trying to get the chest through that hole, and that is the right thing to do, but I have to use a cardinal direction instead of just push right. the chest to the hole. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned earlier that some of the puzzles wanted to be solved their one way, and they had no leeway or not even a good explanation about why my way wouldn't work. I mean, sometimes you come up with an alternative solution, and it's just like, whatever, that doesn't work because whatever. And, you know, for it at least gives you a plausible reason. And I didn't feel like I was getting that sometimes. There's the puzzle where you've got the case with stamps, with valuable stamps mm-hmm. in it, and there's some water in the case, right? And it's like, and you've got to get the water out of the case. And the solution ends up being pretty reasonable. But I came up with other stuff, like, I mean, there's a crack in the case. So, okay, I'm going to drink the water in the case. You know, it didn't let you do that. You should be able to pour the water out of the crack. Mm-hmm. And
The one I tried.
It didn't let you do that. So I just, you know, if it doesn't want to allow those because it wants me to find a specific solution, that's fine. But I at least wanted a reasonable explanation of why I can't drink the water, because in my vision of it, it seemed like it would make sense. I also just don't understand why putting a bar underneath the bunk suddenly makes them safe to get through that door. Just in my vision of what's going on based on the description, it just makes sense.
I agree. I was also disappointed by the squid. First, I liked the squid. I don't even remember which ship had the squid, but like the giant squid, because when I wrote that it's ship. Then it's tense, because like you're sneaking your way through here and you go into a cabin. It says below decks, there is another cabin used to house the ship's crew. There are exits forward and aft. There is a giant squid sleeping here. I'm like, ooh, okay. Like, tense moment.
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me that the solution is just go on through and don't make any noise.
Ignore it. If you even examine the squid, you're dead.
Right. And that bugged me. So I kind of got through it. But right after that, you go into squid. Cruise quarters where you find a bunch of dead people, including one of which has a sword. So I'm like, now I've got a sword, squid, let's go. Nope. Can't kill a squid with the sword. The sword has nothing to do with the squid. It's for that rope. The squid is just a McGuff squid. I don't like the squid.
It's a red herring.
Nicely done. Nicely done, sir.
The squid wakes up and kills you if you so much as look at it. But you can take a giant heavy chest filled with coins and like push it right by the squid.
Just push it right by and it's totally fine with it.
Yeah.
So I like the tension introduced by the existence of the squid, but I didn't like interacting with the squid or the solution to the squid. Very disappointing.
Squid could have been the best part of the game, but, you know, could have been a friendly squid.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. Was it?
Another note I have is about winding your watch. Two things about that. The first is, will people younger than me know that watches get wound? Like, so even as a thing, I wonder how that's going to age. But also, it didn't really bother me because I kind of laughed at it. In the game, there is a time display. And I thought because I'm using Zoom, it must be broken because it's not going forward. And they tell me to meet at 10 o'clock and I'm just walking around. The time never changes, but it doesn't change because you haven't wound your watch. And that's kind of funny.
That was a little clever. This is a Zoom parser bug or something.
I thought so too. And I was like, oh, the time is broken. It's stalled. What's going on? It doesn't move forward until I actually do a thing. I keep thinking all these complicated things. And it's like, no, time is ticking forward. Your just watch shows that it's still 9:02 or whatever. So I thought that was good. I give the points for that.
Yeah, it was kind of clever. But for me, on its own, it would have been fine, but it just added to the, like what Chris said about just like the drudgery of everyday life. I mean, you've got to go to the bank and you've got to wind your watch and you've got to, you know, just like, it's just walking from place to place. And if you don't, you've got to lock your door every time you leave your apartment. Otherwise things get stolen. It's just like, I see what you're saying. And it ended up being clever, but in the gestalt, along with everything else, it was just like one more stupid thing you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when I played the game, it's like first move, wind watch, get that out of the way. So you only have to do it once.
Another negative thing, which at first I thought was a positive thing, deals with this whole idea that I said before the spoiler fence, that it's a game of three sections instead of two sections.
Oh yeah, tell me about,
because like we talked about how really section. It's like the first section on Hardscrabble Island, which is a good. Yeah. Good name. Like, there's some good stuff in there. Like, I like that it's Hardscrabble Island. That's cool. Yeah. So Hardscrabble Island, and then at point, you're basically flipping a coin. Like, does he show you a coin or does he show you a plate? And that tells you which shipwreck to go to, and so you're branching off. And one good thing about the game is it seems to pick, like, the two of them right before he shows you. So you don't have to start the game right from the beginning again. You can save. Huh. I just went to my save that was as close to before we went and met in the shanty. And, or no, when we meet up in the lighthouse or whatever. Well, anyway, wherever he shows you the thing, as long as you're saved right before that, you can pick up and just like take a second.
I have a feeling that you can pick either one, either way.
Oh, I never tried that.
I didn't try it either, but he seems genuinely clueless. For some diver, he's just like, I found this plate. I don't know where it came from. You're going to have to tell me the longitude and latitude and how deep it is. And just like, dude.
But I wonder what happens.
Are you literate? Can you check the book?
If he shows you the plate and you go to the coin one instead of the stamps one, I wonder if you actually like find the treasure there. I never tried that. But anyway, a thing I don't like, and the reason I think it's a thing of three parts, it's not that you play the first half on Hardscrabble Island, which has like McGinty being annoying and a whole bunch of meetings, and then suddenly we're going off to adventure. It's the first part, McGinty's annoying, you have a whole bunch of meetings, and then we flip a coin and lock into one of the shipwrecks.
Yep.
Then there's a whole bunch of stuff where you get ready and it's essentially exactly the same, except you're going to go on a different ship and you either bring the stuff, your shallow water diving stuff from your room, or you don't bring it because you're doing the deep water diving stuff and that's on the boat. And it's almost all the same. So then if you play the game twice, inherently you're going to have to repeat that middle section from figuring out which ship it is to being on the correct ship, and it's essentially the same thing, and that's annoying. So middle section two is just do it again, almost identical, and then section three, which is the actual interesting part, you get to dive for a shipwreck, and section three is the only part of the game that's actually fun to play.
Right, and section two, actually, if you probably another time after you find out that you get your throat cut and you've got to go deal with McGinty, and you've got to go back and do it again. You know,
do it again.
Two and a half times.
Oh, it's so annoying when like that, because I too got to the end and you die, and then looking up and getting some help tells me I have to have learned about this meeting that somehow I didn't spot, and then get this envelope. I'm like, what the heck is that?
Right. Yeah.
That was really annoying. Learning by death is very.
Oh, that just, I didn't write this down, but I just thought of something that the game felt, and parts of it, the game felt like unfinished, and like it could have been bigger. I didn't have notes of this, but there was like a lighthouse door that can't be opened, and there were,
you basically meet at the lighthouse. It's like a place to gather,
right, but there's a door there that you don't have a key for, and there was a couple of other little things that felt like this should lead to more.
There was that whole like marsh area or whatever, like, which is basically just acting as a wall, like you can't go farther than here in the which I'm fine with, like that's just how you limit
a
map.
There's a couple of just little areas that are just like, why have a door if you're never going to be able to open in this game? It just didn't make sense. I mean, in one of these games, if there's a door, you're gonna either get through it or find a way to get behind it. But
And if you can't get through it, it's because you can't get through it now.
Right.
But you'll be able to get through it later. But there is no later for this. It's just, it doesn't exist.
So and there was another room like that too, or another. Anyway, I thought that was really uninfocom of it, of them. Yeah, that's all I want to say about that. But
I agree, though. Like overall, though, it's that's why I find the game is disappointing. Like there's, I agree that it seemed a little unfinished, but mostly it was like I really didn't like the first section, which is meetings.
The fairy. And,
the fairy, which does eventually show up or whatever, but you can't get a token for it, so no, it's just like here's a fairy. Why even have the fairy be a thing?
Exactly.
Well, I started thinking maybe it was supposed to tell me about the tide. Maybe the fairy there was a clue, like the fairy would come at high tide or whatever. Nope. But the reality is, you need to use the tide table, your favorite thing, the tide table, to look up.
Actually, you don't. I never use it, but. But
I didn't like either. Actually, said, just I did the same thing. I just went early and waited.
Yeah, but there is a fairy programmed into the game, and it comes every couple hours, and it says you can't get on the fairy without a token. You know what? There is no token. You can't get on that fairy. Then why is this part of the game? It's it's so uninfocom like. And then story wise. Who are the two guys who have the meeting at the ferry landing?
It's McGinty and Weasel.
Weasel, they have the meeting, and Weasel gets on the ferry. Why?
Yes.
Why? Why does Weasel get on? And he shows up again later, fine. Mm-hmm. But where is he going? Why is he getting on the ferry? Where did he go? What did it have to do with how this game goes?
He went to go get the key for the lighthouse.
Maybe. Maybe it made this game seem unfinished, or just like they had ideas that they didn't implement or something.
Well, that's kind of how it felt to me too. Right from the beginning, I thought, well, shouldn't I have four shipwrecks instead of two to explore, and areas you can't go to, and the puzzles? But like it didn't seem like as much of a game. It's fewer places. It's far fewer puzzles. There's far less fun. Like it's not as complete a game. It's very journeyman game, I think. Like it kind of checks the boxes and it does the thing. But I found a bug, and heck, I never find bugs. So.
Yeah. Well, I think this is my last note. I thought it was weird. The map, the Inviziclues map. In it, aft is to the right. But in the game, aft is south. You can always type aft in the game, but.
Oh, in fact, I did the aft for starboard
right.
port.
You can do that. But in the map, I mean, they put so little thought into it, I guess, that in the handwritten map in the clues, aft is right, fore is left. When in the game, aft is south and fore is north. And like, really? I don't know. Just didn't have the level of infocom polish that one comes to expect.
I never looked at that. I'm looking at it now. I never actually looked at the InvisiClues map. Looks kind of like the map I made. There's not a lot of locations, so it's pretty easy to map this game. Because like Hardscrabble Island has a bunch of locations, but it's very linear laid out. Like you're on the Wharf Road or you're in the back alley and like that's where you are. Yeah. And then on the ships, well, they have like a below deck and a top deck and a middle deck. They're again just like in a row. Like there's five middle deck sections and both ships are essentially kind of the same. And they're both the same. Oh, in fact, the Mary Margaret and the Nightwind, essentially they are the same. They have exactly the same layout. But even the ships you dive down to are very similar. Top deck, middle deck, below deck. It's just the Sao Vera or whatever has a couple of more rooms below decks or something. But
and a giant squid.
And a giant squid. It has a giant squid, which the other one is missing from. And skeletons with a sword that will not help you with a giant squid. Anyway, I gotta say I give it a thumbs down. Like I wouldn't play it again. Definitely, there's a lot of games we played. Most of the games we played, I can see me going back to after I forgot. Maybe I'd want to go back early. Maybe I'd go back again after I forgot about them. I can see me replaying Ballyhoo. I can see me replaying Trinity. I can see me replaying Hollywood Hijinks. Like a bunch of these games, I would play again. I would play Sherlock Holmes again just to mock you. But I can't see me coming back to this game. Like my memory of this game is soured enough that when I forget all the details, my takeaway will be, I didn't like that one. Now, then again, like every once in a while, there'll be like a movie or a book that I will have watched or read and I won't like it. But then later I'll think, it can't be as bad as I remembered. look at that the premise is too good. And then I go back and I watch it again. I'm like, nope, why am I doing this to myself? So there'd be like a couple of movies that I will watch like a few times. And even though they're awful. So maybe there'll be this. Maybe this will be the only one I replay. Because I'll think, well, it can't be as bad as I remembered. Future Carrington, listen to this part. Yes, it is. It's as bad as you remembered. Don't do it.
Future Carrington won't go past the spoiler, France, because he doesn't want to remember the stuff he forgot.
So I should have told Future Carrington this earlier. Oh, sorry, Future Carrington. So would you recommend this game?
Absolutely not.
Would you replay this game?
It's just not the worst game. It's not my least favorite, which is probably still Sherlock and Moon Mist, perhaps. But I wouldn't play this again. I would not recommend it. There's so many, like you said, unless you were trying to be a completionist, which we are. But there's so many good ones, and this this is not there. It just in plot, in completeness, in number of puzzles and puzzle quality, it's just not there.
Yep, it does not deliver the Infocom goods, and that is a shame.
Yeah, indeed. What is not a shame is that we will be back in a few weeks
to with play Infidel.
Infidel.
Pirate? No, not pirates. Pyramids. I'm keen on pyramids.
Yeah, it's our pyramid scheme.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's what you get. You get for now a deep dive and no pirates in Cutthroats. Disappointing game. Oh, well. But that brings us to the end of this episode. Sorry, it wasn't much of a... It was a bit of a downer, but hey, you get what you get. And this has been Eaten by a Grew.
Pays your money, it takes your chances.
Exactly. You pays your money, it takes your dives. This has been Eaten by a Grew, the Infocom podcast. If you want to send us feedback, you can send us email, grew@monsterfeet.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. And we will gladly share our air tanks with you if you give us a nice review on iTunes to encourage other people to come and join the fun.
We'll say tanks a lot.
Oh, no, we won't. The show notes as such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for putting the groovy in Grew, or actually, the opposite, the other way around. Anyway, he let us use his tune as our theme song, and we appreciate it. That's what I'm trying to say. So thank you very much for podcasting with me, Kevin.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Kieran.
And I'll talk to you next time for Infidel.
Bye.
Bye.
You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Grew.
Abaft. Yeah, I didn't learn any words in this game.
That surprises me.
I guess I learned everything I know about boats I've learned from Infocom games.
That's really sad. And you are probably doomed to die at sea.